Everyone's asleep.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinny Eastwood Show. In fact, this one's going to be a very special one, I can tell you and assure you, and various other reinforcing adjectives, because my very special guest is the man who, well, at the same time as inspire you and get you off your keister, he also makes you wig out somewhat, and he's really great. Which I suspect is why they called him Dane Wigington. Dane, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Vinny. Thanks for your courage and your ongoing effort to expose the crimes that are happening in our skies day in, day out.
I call it scumbaggery. Now,
yeah.
Can you, something I wanted to get into, that I know that you have a lot of news to relay regarding the geoengineering issue that is of, extremely pressing validity in our times. But I was just signing off, being able to move into a new home, and the person asked me who I was interviewing, and I recall that you, in fact, have a really fabulous home that was on the front cover of a magazine or something of that nature, and you were very successful working for the corporates and what have you. And I wanted to actually ask you to relay your story of how that all kind of came about and how it happened for you.
Well, any success I've had was not in the corporate world. I mean, I originally was a Bechtel Power employee, but that was 30 years ago. And I've since worked for myself, but my goal in coming here, Vinny, to the Northwest was to try to get into clean air. I grew up in the smog in Southern California, and it was a goal since the time I was small to get out of that. So you can imagine my angst when I finally got to the wilderness of the Pacific Northwest, built a large off-grid home, and then discovered that some sort of experimentation was happening in the skies above me. And although I'd heard about this before, I had to experience it firsthand and begin to do my own research before the magnitude of what was going on became apparent. I mean, as these great patterns would be put on intermittent days above my home with a large off-grid system blocking sometimes 70, 80, even 90% of my solar uptake, I mean, a virtual blanket in the sky from horizon to horizon on given days. And I quickly came to the subject of geoengineering and found a mountain of data and was shocked that I had never heard of this before. This was 2001, 2002. And it didn't take a lot of research to come to the conclusion that this looked like what was happening. I didn't want to believe it, decided I would do some lab tests to hopefully confirm that nothing was falling. But I was very dismayed to find that, in fact, aluminum was coming down. An initial test of 7 parts per billion, Vinny, that was already high given our location. I talked to a hydrogeologist right out the gate and assured me that I shouldn't have levels anywhere near that high given where I lived. And I've said many times before, but this is so shocking, it needs to be restated, that subsequent rain tests over the next 5 years escalated as high as 3,450 parts per billion in a single rain event of aluminum, and that's astronomically high. So it's been a battle ever since. I mean, where do you run? Where do you hide? This is happening everywhere over the whole globe. We know that from lots of surveys, lots of studies. And have you ever seen the whale study that was done of any 1,000 whales from around the globe? Has that ever crossed your radar?
No, it hasn't.
There was in 2010, they studied 1,000 whales from around the globe, and at the last minute, the researchers decided to test for inorganics, and they came up with, this is a direct quote from the report, jaw-dropping levels of aluminum in these whales. So this is, again, from the most remote places on the planet. I think that's a pretty strong indicator. There's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide, and thus I made the decision that this battle had to be dealt with, and I've been at it ever since.
It occurs to me that this is a battle of human instinct. You have that option of flight. What is left when that is taken away from you?
Only to fight. You're exactly right. And when you're standing on the end of the plank and there's nowhere else to go, that's what you do. So my hope in the constant dissemination of information, and thankfully through the help of people like yourself, to try to, as clearly as possible, paint the picture with solid fact for people to understand that this is not something we can ignore. This is not a problem that's going to go away or sit and simmer. This is a noose that's being tightened around our necks by the day, no matter where we're at. It is stealing the future, any chance of a future, from our children. And even if it stopped tomorrow, much damage has already been done. We are all inhaling this stuff every breath we take. And when I say things like that, too, for a lot of people, I know you're obviously very up to speed at this, but so many people think that's some sort of a speculative statement that we're inhaling these materials. When we test the air, we've got 70-plus tests from my county alone at the state-certified lab. We know this stuff's coming down. There's no question about it. We know we're breathing it. We know what it does to our bodies over time. It accumulates, and so there's no speculation in this statement at all. And we see exactly what we'd expect to see from the constant exposure to these particulates. We see ALS, Alzheimer's, autism, ADD, and a long list of other ailments going off the charts, and really in many ways direct correlation to when we know these programs ramped up. For example, in the continental U.S. from 2005 to 2010, we see respiratory mortality going from 8th on the list of mortality to 3rd. Those are gargantuan leaps, and simply there's no other way to account for the absolutely off-the-charts escalation of everything respiratorily related.
And yet, despite the fact that there's no other possible way to account for it, people still live in, I would say, a perpetual bubble of denial with blinders on, earplugs, and I don't think they are even capable, to a large degree, of admitting that these programs are going on. It's bad science, at the end of the day, that would make one deny the reality of chemtrail geoengineering.
You mean that they infer that? I'm trying to get your exact angle on that. It's bad science that they would try to infer as the reason they're not accepting this?
More or less.
Yeah. Well, that's what they would try to infer. But in this case, when we have, this is how short the argument should be. We have film footage up close and personal of these planes spraying. That's the end of the argument. It doesn't go any farther than that. We have films of the crime occurring. So, you know, when I have anybody try to, quote, debate me on the issue of whether or not they're spraying, we have film footage of it, arguments over. And, you know, that anybody who tries to, and many people do, I certainly encounter, just like you do, Vincent, this sort of dogmatic denial. But quite simply, for most of those people, I think they're too fearful to really face this issue. The notion that you can't run, you can't hide, you can't escape it is too much for a lot of people, and they simply put some sort of defense mechanism up. But that tactic, if you will, I think will be short-lived, because the ramifications of what's happening around us right now are so cataclysmic and so immediate that people's heads are going to be yanked out of the sand very, very quickly, like it or not. They will face the repercussions from what they have ignored so far.
Well, it's like Ayn Rand said, is you can ignore reality, but you can't ignore the consequences of ignoring reality.
There you go. There you go. That's a good statement. And right now, I think we're in a transition period in many ways, Vincent. The power structure has clearly taken a different tack with its corporate-controlled media in recent months and even the last year plus to 2 years. It is clearly visible what they're attempting to get across. For example, in the Weather Channel, which is owned by a chain that leads to the Rothschilds, they are so theatrically trying to play up some of the weather events, especially these cooling events that we've had in the U.S. that are very short-lived. But I believe the power structure has indeed changed direction, and this is something people need to really contemplate and examine all the data that makes me make the statement. Clearly, for many years, they wanted everybody to know the planet was warming. They had an agenda for that, and they wanted to saddle society with a lot of burdens that really weren't the burden of society to shoulder, and to make red herrings out of many things. For example, in California, CARB, the California Air Resources Board, very powerful organization, is basically breaking the backs of the farmers here in California, forcing them to buy new equipment that meets the emission standards for particulates, while at the same time completely ignoring geoengineering, which is a source of particulate matter that's mathematically perhaps 100,000 times greater, but they've virtually turned two blind eyes to this source of particulates. And I've spoken in front of CARB. Again, this is probably one of the most powerful air monitoring organizations on the planet. And I spoke in front of them with a room full of farmers to make clear to these farmers that they were being made, the scapegoat for these larger overlying programs. And CARB admitted in this meeting that they virtually have no interest in what's happening with climate modification because it's not in their jurisdiction. Well, I don't think people are going to buy that much longer. I don't think that excuse is going to fly when, in California, for example, we're literally at this point, Vincent, the victim of weather warfare. They have cut off the moisture to California. Where I live in the last 7 years, my location is 250 inches of rain short for 7 years. They're literally tearing up orchards in one of the most fertile valleys on the planet, one of the food production centers of the United States. They're tearing up orchards because no moisture is falling, and we know why it's not falling, because we have satellite photos day in, day out of the blanket spraying of the Eastern Pacific, which shuts off our moisture. So this is, at this point, one can only view it as weather warfare against our own population here.
Now, is this in accordance with any other plans? Because I am aware of Agenda 21 and the UN Commission for Biodiversity and a number of other plans for which they want to get people off of the land and concentrate them into megacities, into slave blocks, that kind of thing. Do you see a similarity between the proposed plans of forced urbanization and the decline of rainfall in those particular areas?
That's a very valid question. I think at this point, you know, there's certain things we can know, other things we can't know with any certainty. But we can say that the cutting off of the hydrological cycle is a direct result of the aerosol programs and the ionosphere heaters, the HAARP facilities that are around the globe. The completely erratic behavior of the jet stream and the known effect of the aerosolization, we have enough data to really conclusively say that that's what's cutting off the hydrological cycle to California. As far as the connection with Agenda 21, given that we're talking about the same power structure and we see things being carried out that seem to correlate with the goals of that power structure, I think it's a pretty safe bet to say that it's absolutely connected. What I would add is this. I believe right now the power structure has unleashed things that can't be put back. Certainly Fukushima's one. We know that. But there are also climate feedback mechanisms that geoengineering has been very causal in releasing that can't be stopped now either. So no matter what plans they have, no matter what camps they planned on rounding people up and putting them into, and no matter how much they planned on just controlling the food supply and controlling the climate, that's an arrogance that defies comprehension, to think that they could control the climate and do anything other than screw it up, which is what they've done. But I would argue this, Vincent, that I think that the swamp will be so full of alligators soon, for all of us, metaphorically, that the power structure as well will be facing so many challenges that I don't care what plans they have, I think they're going to have a hell of a time trying to carry them out, because the walls are closing in on everybody. The ship is sinking for them as well. And I think they're beginning to realize that. I think they're in a bit of a panic. They're trying to stock their bunkers and make preparations and try to lull the public into their normal media comatose. But things are happening on such a cataclysmic level and ramping up so quickly that I feel all their plans are likely not going to reach fruition.
Is that encouraging to you, or is it? I'm not 100% sure if that's actually really, really good news, Dane, because it means all of us are fracked.
Yeah, it for me it is good news in this sense that no matter how difficult the challenges are that we will all face, the current juggernaut of insanity that is grinding the planet to bits, the atmosphere with it, our life support systems with it, that has to stop. If that doesn't stop, there'll be nothing left. Nothing left to salvage. And all these sort of futuristic apocalyptic movies that we watch where collapse has already happened, but yet there's still an atmosphere, there's still animals, there's still life. That's only Hollywood. And on the road we're on, nothing will be left. I mean, we see results right now that should alarm the hell out of people, and it's astounding that it hasn't yet. For example, in Northern California, it's been a while since we've talked, so I'll fill you in on some other data that adds to our geoengineered climate nightmare. They have so shredded the ozone layer, and there is simply no other plausible causal factor to pin this on but geoengineering. When we know the level at which they are saturating the atmosphere with these particulates, we know the effect of those particulates on the ozone layer, there's simply no other major causal factor as geoengineering. The CFCs that the ozone destruction has been blamed on is a red herring. They're bad for the ozone, but very, very minute in scale compared to geoengineering. So we have an ozone hole now, not just over the southern hemisphere, but massive northern hemisphere hole. We've known this for a while, but we started metering this about 6 months ago. We bought, through an anonymous donor, we got good metering equipment, state-of-the-art stuff. We meter in California, Maine, Florida, New Mexico. And we're able to measure UVA and UVB and UVC. Now, right now we have UVB levels, Vincent, that are 1,200% higher than we're being told. And these are very lethal levels. The UV is so powerful here, it's burning the bark off of trees. And you can drive into the city in Northern California called Redding, where I live near this city, and this is a city known for its trees. The trees look hideous in the whole town. The branches are burnt on the ends. The bark is literally fried off the trunks on the south-southwest side. It's gone, completely gone down to core wood. And people seem still to be oblivious, and nothing grows here. I mean, the trees are not only not growing, they're dying everywhere. You can't grow a garden. No UV or no ozone layer and excessive UV radiation, that by itself can end life on the planet. And so you couple that with the weather patterns that are completely derailed now, the methane that's spewing from the Arctic, the ocean currents that have now changed directions largely to do with geoengineering and its altering of the wind currents, that changes ocean currents. We have a very, very dark horizon, and I know every radio show I feel like I'm showing up with my cloak and my sickle like the Grim Reaper, but I'm trying to wake people up to the fact that we have to accept whatever reality we face and prioritize. If the ship's going down, and the ship is going down, what do we do? Do we deal with 100 little issues that won't matter, or do we deal with the one big one on which everything rests? And that's what I would argue. Geoengineering is that issue. And if we don't stop it, it's going to be game over soon enough. And even with Fukushima and the radiation, which is also obviously a game-ending event, potentially, if we're breathing these particulates day in, day out, and we're not thinking cognitively, and none of us are completely healthy at this point, none of us, but if that continues and we can't think clearly at all, how can we face Fukushima or any other disaster, for that matter?
Now, speaking of facing this and facing the facts, it occurs to me that these are inherently traumatic things. I've gotten over it, okay? I've spent my occasional night, curled into a ball crying and what have you, just going, please, God, let it not be true, and then accepting the fact that it is, unfortunately, and then having to deal with it. It's because in my past I've had systematic amounts of trauma, and as a result, I can deal with this. It's not easy, but I can deal with it. Perhaps this is the reason why many people are unable to deal with it and unable to face it and unable to admit the reality of it, is because they have not yet suffered enough in their own life in order to obtain the strength of will and character that it takes to do so.
I appreciate you sharing that with me. I really do. And it's meaningful to me, and I... makes me reflect a bit too, and I've had some rough treks in my life as well, and you know, perhaps that's added to a thicker skin. That being said, I'm trying to, in the course of delivering the data that I feel forced and compelled and responsible to deliver, I'm trying to point out to people that our philosophy, which is what you just shared with me, is imperative in this equation. It's imperative that we realize what's within our control and what's not, and that what truly matters is that we focus on playing our part in the play as best we can, that this has to come down to a decision to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do, not because we're guaranteed a happy ending. And in some senses, a happy ending can exist in just having stayed at one's post and never given up. And that being said, we don't know exactly how the dominoes will fall. We're in uncharted waters, period. We don't know what other elements may be in this equation that might be in our favor that we just don't see yet. But that being said, if I have a choice of falling off the end of the plank and not even having tried to make a stand, or at least while I'm still standing to scream out, there's no choice. It's to try to stay in the fight. And I hope people are not overwhelmed by the data, that they reexamine their philosophy, that this sort of paradigm that our modern society has put us in, where everything is Disneyland and everything turns out happy and there's no challenge, and that's not reality. And the sooner we realize it, accept it, and not just accept it, but embrace it, I think it makes us much stronger if we embrace the challenge instead of trying to be adverse to it and running from it. Turn around, face it, embrace it. And in that, you know, we can have our best chance of the best potential outcome. And in the case of geoengineering, again, no matter how dark the horizon looks, I try to stress this to people, Vincent, that if we could simply bring this issue to light and to a halt, it would be so catalyzing for society that people from all walks, from all ideologies, would come together on this issue. And if we could stop this one issue, it would be a quantum leap in the right direction. No matter how dark things look, that by itself would be monumental in the right direction again. So I hope people focus on that. And, you know, when you're climbing a mountain, and I've climbed a lot of them, and if, just for the reason of continuing to try to test that sort of philosophy you just mentioned, you don't look at the top and try to figure out where you're going to take your steps on some precipice that's still 3,000 feet above you. You have to focus on what's in front of you. When you reach that higher point, then you'll deal with that then. But I hope people approach it in that manner.
That's right. It's I also have a saying, don't worry, it's just the end of the world. And when we have these kind of things right there in front of you, you know, I look up at the sky and you see a enormous what you call the dog's bollocks chemtrail, because they stand out, they're like they're the only one in the sky. You get those occasionally in New Zealand. What I worry about is not only the fact that it's being done, not only the fact that that plane has its transponder turned off so I can't even track it on the internet, not only am I worried about the fact that it's poisoning my air, not only am I worried about the fact that it's poisoning my water with aluminium and so on and so forth, because it gets into all the catchment and drinking water. Apparently, you only need one part per million to make drinking water undrinkable, according to the EPA, right? So what I'm worried about is not all of those things necessarily. It's that those other people cannot see that dog's bollocks chemtrail and believe it to be the same thing that I am, despite the overwhelming evidence. And this is about mind control. This is about brainwashing. This is about entertainment and distraction. These are all tools that have been used to distract people from this very important, maybe terrifying, truth. And so what I find interesting is that in using those very same tactics that were used to brainwash people, repeat to them over and over again, chemtrails aren't real, chemtrails aren't real, we can use those exact same tactics. We can use repetition. We can use valuable arguments. We can use the weight of evidence. We can use the power of truth to overcome all of it, if only we would believe in ourselves enough to do so.
I share all those feelings and insights that you just discovered. I mean, it certainly leaves one with a feeling of angst when people around you can't seem to see something that's so incredibly obvious right in front of their face. And it is very perplexing. And on the other hand, as you stated, through persistence, I've had many times people come to me 6 months after some sort of encounter with them and say, I thought you were crazy, but I looked into this and it's real. And so it took that seed a while to grow. And I know it's my nature. I like to put the whole oak tree down someone's throat. I want to give it all to them right now so they understand it in totality right now. And I know with this issue it just can't be done. And I've had to back myself off to leaving or planting a seed. And that's why we've distributed so many of our flyers. I think we put out about 60,000 now of the color glossy two-sided flyers. And those have helped a lot, because it's enough for people to open the door a bit. And once it's open, it's hard to shut. So they seem to then be more willing to take in information. And inevitably, when you walk away, they're reading that flyer. You don't have to go into a big tirade, point at the sky, and jump up and down. Just to pass it off and explain that it's extremely important. They should educate themselves for the issue, and that's helped a lot too. But it is astounding how well people have been trained to not let anything in that might threaten their perception of reality, Vince, and I share that angst.
I just had a profound realization while you were saying that. You're talking about planting seeds, and you know how seeds don't grow in aluminium contaminated soil.
Yeah, that's true. What do you do then? You know, that's the same. I mean, mentally, you know, that is a great point. It's a great analogy. So the soil's not growing. At the same time, if the neurons aren't firing, psychologically, people aren't going to be able to get this soon enough either. I mean, it is true. It's a bad mix where, as we're trying to reach them to point out the contamination itself is making them for more and more unreachable. It's affecting us all cognitively. There's no question about that. And then we have the synergistic toxicity, which I'm not sure we talked about before, but it's important for people to remember. These metals are all horrifically bad on their own. We know that. But you start to combine them, and they become exponentially worse. And we don't have studies on all the combinations, but we do have on some. We know we're all contaminated with mercury, no question about that. Now we know we all have aluminum in us, and we do have studies that indicate the combination of these two metals can increase overall toxicity by as much as 10,000%. It's an incredibly lethal brew. It's amazing our bodies can take what they have taken already. But everything has its breaking point, and we're seeing in the case of studies released in April of this year in the continental U.S., 1 in 3 U.S. citizens now dies with Alzheimer's. Seniors die with Alzheimer's and or autism or dementia. Alzheimer's or dementia, not dies from it, but they die with it, and that's a staggering statistic, 33%. So, and all of us are somewhere on our way to that. And none of us can have a truly healthy diagnosis at this point because we all have this stuff in us. So some are more resilient than others, but it's quite a vicious circle that we find ourselves in. And this is another thing that I'm trying to drive this point home, Vincent. I have a presentation this Friday in Northern California, and the title of that presentation is Climate Engineering, Weather Warfare, and the Collapse of Civilization. And on the collapse issue, many people are starting to realize weather warfare is going on, climate engineering is going on, but not very many, I believe, understand just how close societal collapse is. This is what I was alluding to at the beginning of our conversation. It seems far off to people, but this is a scenario that will seem far off until the brick hits them in the head. And I would argue that's a lot closer than people understand, because so many things are at the breaking point. That's why you have these conflicts springing up all over the world. All of it comes down to resources, and the global engineering has sped up that equation radically because it has decreased food production in so many places around the globe. I mean, California alone has been absolutely devastated. You can't grow a garden here. I mean, not where we're at. Unless you heavily augment your soil, you might have 1/10 of your normal production. We had a huge garden, about 100-foot bed, that was a jungle 7-8 years ago with no real effort at all. We couldn't keep 10 feet of that going this year. Nothing lived, nothing grew. If you could get something to grow, it wouldn't flower. The native plants don't grow. Trees are dying all over the forest. I mean, they're dying all over the forest, 300-400-year-old trees. And even trees with their feet in the water are dying near some of the streams. All the streams are largely drying up now, but which is indicative of the fact that it's not just drought-related. And we have USDA soil scientists, U.S. Department of Agriculture, have off the record admitted to me they know that it's not just the drought killing the trees, but the people, the scientists here, not just here, all over the world, and I know you know this too, Vincent, their complacency in this situation is absolutely appalling. The degree of silence, and yes, I know their lives are at risk, but if the ship is going down anyway, at what point do you find your courage and sing out?
Now,
I think that, go ahead.
I've got this this deep concern. It's almost like playing chicken. You know, who's gonna turn their car first? I think that we're the ones who won't be turning the wheel the other way, for we understand the consequence of losing this this battle. We're basically playing chicken with a 747.
We are, and this is something that can't be ignored. Again, I know people, like with 9/11 and other issues, they just feel if they ignore it, it'll all go away. This isn't going away. If we don't deal with this, we'll have nothing left to care about in very short order. And that's why, again, with geoengineering, I know I've had a lot of people say to me that, or indicate to me, they think this is just something I'm passionate about, so it's something I chose to do as if somehow I like it. That couldn't be further from the truth. This is the last job I ever wanted. It simply needed to be done. And it's not a simple matter of I like the Red Sox and somebody else likes the Dodgers. This is, you pick this issue because it is the house burning to the ground. It is the issue that you must deal with. And I don't understand, as you mentioned earlier, people's lack of willingness to take into consideration the full ramifications of geoengineering. But the point I was trying to make, when you have one issue that is literally tearing the atmosphere apart, disrupting all natural life support systems on the planet, poisoning everything from the clouds to the ground, you must deal with that. You simply have to deal with that. You can't hide, you can't run, and you have to turn and fight back. And that's where we're at. And again, in Northern California right now, our water situation is so radically critical that finally people who have really had their head buried in the sand are starting to pull it out. And you have media here trying to assure people that not to worry about the drought, that that's why we have dams. Well, the dams are empty. And this summer, when people turn their tap on, nothing's going to come out. And right now we have fires all over the globe. We've had catastrophic fires all over the U.S. for the last few years. And this year, I mean, the forest is literally one step away from being completely dead. And this is a very resilient forest where I live, and it can't go any longer. I mean, the UV is so intense, the trees have dropped much of their foliage. Even in the summer, they were dropping their leaves in August. And we haven't had appreciable rain in the location I live, which is boreal rainforest. That's 70-plus inches a year is considered rainforest. So in 2013, instead of 70-plus inches of rain, we had about 7, about one-tenth. And the air is much, much drier because these particulates are desiccants, so they absorb and accrete all available moisture. So not only is there no rain, the humidity is way lower. And actually, Vincent, we measured with the UV levels I was talking about. The reason we know the UVB is so high is because we think that the metering agencies here like NOAA have been falsifying the data for at least 30 years. Basically, the data they post for UV levels is completely fictitious. And the way we know that so in such a cut-and-dried fashion is because we are told by all major metering agencies that no more than 5% of total incoming UV is UVB. We know that now it's at least 60%. That's a 1,200% increase. We think the whole spectrum has gone up, and we're actually getting UVC now. UVC is the last bandwidth of radiation before you hit X-ray. We're told it stops 100,000 feet up in the atmosphere. It's hitting the surface of the planet now. And so on this forest here and getting people to wake up, between the UV, between the lack of moisture, between the aluminum that's now saturating our soils, we have virtually the entire ecosystem collapsing. So that should start to wake people up. And again, what I would argue in the overall picture, this is happening around the globe. We have marine die-off everywhere. We have forests burning to the ground. Production's not happening for food. I saw in parts of South America where Argentina cautioned their citizens not to eat so many tomatoes because the crop didn't happen. We're there. There's no hiding for this much longer. And to add more to the UV equation, UVB is a very lethal band of radiation for plankton. It penetrates much further into the ocean depths. It's absolutely decimating plankton. So we see the bottom of the food chain being killed. It's going to go up through the food chain. It already is. You have marine animals washing up on beaches all over North America and other places now as well. We're hearing there's nothing for them to eat. And the Fukushima radiation is a problem, certainly, but it would not, statistically, does not appear to be enough radiation to start killing things on the West Coast yet. And this appears to be the bottom of the food chain dropping out. You can link that right back to a loss of plankton, link that to the ozone depletion, link that to geoengineering. So many roads lead back to geoengineering, Vincent.
It does. And what occurs to me as you were saying that is, what is real environmentalism? Okay, caring for the environment, stewardship of the planet, that kind of thing. These are the things I define as real environmentalism. Whereas you take climate change activists, for instance, and I want to ask you a question. Have you ever told somebody, go out and research chemtrail geoengineering for yourself, right? You've told many people that, haven't you?
Of course.
Have you ever heard somebody saying, go out and research climate change for yourself and make up your own mind?
I probably have heard a few. But on the environmental end, they are the most lame part of this equation, really bar none. As you said, they're supposed to care about the environment, and they are the most obstinate, dogmatic, and willfully blind group in this entire equation. And I can't express my angst towards some of the biggest environmental groups, and some of which I've been in contact with, and some who have admitted they know this is going on, but it's not part of their current agenda. And again, there is that is the most glaring red flag of a total lack of true regard for what they claim to care about, a complete lack of regard. And from organizations like the Sierra Club, which you've probably heard of the Sierra Club, Vincent, I'm sure you have.
I have, yeah.
And these people who want to wrap themselves in this environmental cloak like they're these caring stewards of the planet will not look at this issue, which is exponentially more important than all other issues they're addressing combined. So the hypocrisy there is absolutely nauseating, and we make it a point, and I'm increasingly making a point on Geoengineering Watch, our website, and also with Disseminations, to shine the spotlight on the so-called environmental groups who are really helping to not only not addressing the issue of geoengineering, they're actually helping to hide it. And the way they help to hide it, groups like ETC, who put out a statement that really touted their participation in a, quote, ban on geoengineering experiments, which didn't mean anything. All it did was put people to sleep, their constituents to sleep, by making them think that they could relax now that there was a ban and nothing would happen. And that is so counterproductive. It was so patently false. So I have great angst for the quote-unquote environmental groups.
You haven't ever gone off at them before, and I think it's only happened the once I've just lost my cool and launched into some sort of tirade at them, that kind of thing. Has this ever happened to you, or have you managed to, you know, keep your resolve?
Well, I guess I would be somewhere in the middle. I mean, I don't lose my composure per se, but I won't walk away. And with environmental groups and with some of the religious institutions here in California, you know, the people of faith here have a responsibility based on their own belief systems as well. And so with environmental groups like Sierra Club, I have had encounters with their head person in Northern California where I very adamantly held to the fact that if he truly was doing this for reasons of virtue, he has a responsibility to look at this issue, which he still has not done, this head individual in Northern California. With some of the religious congregations here in our area, I've had a few of the large pastors of large churches tell me that they wouldn't look at my data because they're just not interested. And I can't walk away like that, and I haven't walked away. And I pointed out to a number of these individuals at separate meetings, different occasions, that their own doctrine does not allow them to turn a blind eye to something of this magnitude, that they're required to be good stewards of the planet. And, you know, I've been able to shame them into taking the data, but in the case of the churches here, it comes down to the fact that they're more worried about their tax-exempt status than they are following the faith that they claim to adhere to. So, you know, that's also hypocrisy for me. And
they're what I call hypocristians.
Yes, hypocrites. Absolutely.
No. Not hypocrites. Hypocrites.
You broke up a little bit. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. Not hypocrites. Hypocristians.
Now I hear you. Yeah, the connection's a little bit bad, but yeah, that would fit.
And you said something there that you won't walk away, and neither do I. And that's the thing, that's the problem when you've got truth on your side, is that people walk away from you. You don't walk away from the debate because they can't handle it.
They do walk away. They do walk away. And I certainly have a completely different circle of acquaintances and friends and so forth, but I would take the circle I have now forever over those that have chosen to walk away. And I respect and regard those whom are willing to stand and make the truth known, regardless of ridicule, regardless of discomfort, that tenacity to not walk away. I hold you in high regard for that, and I hope that I never walk away from this as well.
Where the hell are we going to walk away to, Dane?
Well, we can't. That to me is The only failure in any battle is when you quit. If you don't quit, you can't lose. And the never give up attitude is something we all have to adopt, period. And now this dissemination, this presentation I'm doing this Friday again, will be another YouTube, another video to try to drive the point home to people that this is it. This is not a bump in the road again. This is the end of the road as we have known it, period. And based on all current trajectories, there are so many things coming together, so many converging catastrophes right now, that people who think they're going to stay in a bubble are going to be in for a very rude awakening very, very soon. And no matter how dark it is, though, I hope a reasonable percentage of those people will make the right decision to engage in efforts that still matter, even at this late date. So I would rather have a smaller number of engaged people that are engaged for the right reasons than a whole army of those that just want to make themselves feel better, Vincent. So I'll take the truly committed people as allies over the rest.
Well, it's not entirely dissimilar, the situation we have here, to the Alamo. And even though all the people at the Alamo are no longer with us, their story still stands the test of time and has inspired countless others throughout history to take similar stands and win. Now, one thing I said to your colleague Paul Mack, who does chemtrail activism in Australia, is imagine you're a German citizen, okay, and it's 1935 or something of that nature. Somebody comes and tells you that this wonderful guy who everybody loves, Adolf Hitler, is actually a complete psychopath and he's going to start a war. And during that war, he's going to cause the deaths of up to 40 million people and many millions of which he's going to orderly exterminate in death camps. What if people at that time had believed that information, looked at the evidence, started a movement that grew from one person to 100 to 1,000 to millions? What if World War II had been prevented? And I liken that to the current paradigm of chemtrail activism. Because what if we were able to prevent the worst of the worst from happening?
I mean, that's a good analogy, and I also try to point that out to people who think that they can't affect this equation, and that's simply not true. And I use the math equation. If you successfully conveyed this data to two people at the beginning of a 30-day month, and they to two each the second day of that 30-day month, and so on throughout the month, that's 5.5 million. And people think your math is completely wrong when you point that equation out to them, but it's not wrong. And that's how exponential things can be. So I think about this every day. Every day when I wake up and I remember that this is not a nightmare, this is the reality that we face, and I have to decide how I can make my day matter for the common good. And I keep this in mind, that, you know, what stone might I roll today that could start the avalanche going? And I think in these terms, so, and I'm sure you do too. So if we continue to do that, I think right now, the undercurrent of awareness for this issue is much greater than we realize. And I'm getting contacts now from people who are quite high in the food chain, especially in the entertainment industry, that seem to realize this is going on. But there, so many people, Vincent, are like monkeys with their hand in the jar. I saw when I was a kid a very profound documentary that showed how they catch monkeys. They tie a jar to a tree, they put a fruit in the jar, when the monkey puts his hand in and grabs it, he can't get his hand out. And they just walk right up and grab him, but he won't let go. He won't let go of that fruit. And how much are so many people in our society the same? You know, the ship's going down, but they won't stop dancing on the deck. And, you know, I think that this awareness is sinking in, and geoengineering being such a unique issue, unlike 9/11, unlike Kennedy assassination and 100 other visible conspiracies that were conspiracy fact, they can see it, every day in front of their face. They're realizing the weather is horribly off, and it's something that it just keeps chipping away at their mentality every day. And I think that we could be a lot closer to a break in the dam than we realize, and we need that break to happen very soon, because I can't stress enough how fast the climate is unraveling. It's absolutely imploding. And we do have, I know it's highly controversial with many people still, that, you know, what's happening with the climate in reality. And without going into all that, I want to state some simple facts that I hope people look up to verify. No matter what people think is happening with the climate, there are very powerful and very lethal feedback loops that are now occurring. Methane hydrate is releasing from the seafloor all over the Arctic, really all over the globe, but there's massive deposits in the Arctic. This methane is releasing so powerfully, it's actually breaking up some of the ice right now, this year, in the Laptev Sea. The methane, when people hear about methane, the scientific community still refers to methane as being 20 times more potent than CO2. And the whole CO2 thing, we're back to the environmentalists, all of whom are lame, all of whom blame everything on CO2, while they're ignoring the geoengineering elephant in the room. And I have great disdain for all those environmental people that do that. But the methane is another animal. And the methane is covering the planet like a layer of glass right now. That's why nighttime lows are rising twice as fast as daytime highs. And this is one of the reasons the geoengineers are going for broke, increased spraying everywhere, in an attempt to try to, what amounts to putting the fire out by throwing gas on it. Geoengineering has only fueled the climate unraveling, and yet the worse it gets, the more they spray. And this is the mentality of the military-industrial complex, right? If your head hurts from pounding it on the wall, you're not pounding it hard enough. You just need to pound harder. And that's what we're up against.
Now, when we break down words, we often find a lot of truth within these things. And I was just thinking, we can't call those people environmentalists anymore, because what they are is not an environmentalist. There's just no, there's nothing about them that connotes an environmentalist, more or less. So I was just thinking about the word environment and what's it made up of. There's ENV, there's MO, there's MEN. And I was just thinking, environment, or environmentalists, more or less, are simply envious morons that are mental.
You know, I can't argue that. I really can't. And I consider myself an environmentalist to the gills, but not in the sense that the rest are. And I've cut down more trees than most loggers in my forest, and I have a huge habitat preserve. But I cut down those trees because that's what the forest needed. I didn't log, but there was an overgrowth that had occurred from irresponsible logging in a species of trees that shouldn't have been there. But I know a lot of environmentalists that have this attitude that don't touch anything, don't touch a blade of grass. And that once you've altered the forest, then you need to, at times, take other means to set it right. Well, the same type of environmentalist that I mentioned a minute ago are the type that are the Bill McGibbons. I don't know if you know who Bill McGibbon is, and some of these people who appear to be, if you really trace back some of the finances, it seems to come from places that are quite suspect. And so you wonder how can a person like McGibbon or others, Greenpeace, World Wildlife Federation, how can they possibly not know that geoengineering is going on, especially when we send them data regularly? We drop data in their laps regularly. They do know. But they're simply in their little bubbles of comfort. They want to make themselves feel good, like they're doing something that matters. But they don't really want to face the real battle. They just simply want to sit the bench and feel good about themselves. And I have no respect. And you mentioned the kind of psychological issues with people like this. I know some. In fact, I know a clinical psychologist who considers himself a very courageous environmentalist. He will not face this issue. He won't. In fact, he's left me in the ditch a number of occasions, you know, when he should have stood by me with media contacts and so forth. He absolutely left me in the trench. So I don't have any respect for him. And, you know, being a psychologist, I think, is even more telling of the kind of mentality that goes on with some of these folks.
Well, Dane, you strike me as a man that has high standards, who does not accept incompetence or cowardice. Would I be correct in that assessment, and that you don't have patience for people of that nature?
I don't, and I don't know that I would consider that a virtue in myself. I try to work on that. I try to make myself remember that everybody's wired differently, and if I am, for reasons like you stated with yourself, Vincent, when you were younger, things you went through that maybe tempered you into what you are, and I went through certain experiences that perhaps thickened my skin.
You wouldn't mind sharing any of those experiences with us, would you?
Growing up, I had some very difficult family circumstances that made it tough at times for me to find enough to feed myself and to fend off older siblings that were incredibly violent with me, and things of this nature. So, those things certainly had an effect on me. But there are also those intangibles that we can't really explain why we feel the way we do. And a lot of people, I make it a point to talk to people who seem to care more than everybody else does. Whenever I meet people like that, people like you, I inquire as to if they've always been this way, if when they were children, if they didn't participate in the torturing of animals like other kids were doing. And it seems to be the case that so many people were wired a bit different from the time they were younger. And that's the thing we can't really explain, and why something hit us as being profound. One of my first memories was I was 4 years old, I saw a retarded boy, or bus boy, he dropped some dishes in a restaurant, and all the adults laughed, and I remember it clearly today, because it struck me as incredibly cruel. And what was most profound to me, even at 4 years old, was why it didn't strike the adults as being cruel to laugh at this guy. So there's some things that we can't explain, and I think it's important to try to keep that in mind with other people and not be immediately judgmental, but at the same time, when there's people who, like this one individual I just mentioned that's an environmentalist, psychologist, and so forth, people who have been shown the truth again and again and again and simply refuse to face it, people like this Sierra Club leader that I've met with again and again, people like that, I don't have any tolerance for them anymore. I don't. And at this point, they deserve to be shamed. And frankly, I think that's what's best for their character. Does that make sense? It's not a matter of just being vindictive on my part at all. I simply feel that shame is justified in their case when they will not make any effort to engage in a cause on which all depends. Their children, my children, and all the children of the world, when they will not engage because it's simply not comfortable for them, I think shame is a necessary element for the growth of their character. Does that make sense?
You reminded me just of a friend, John Astor. No, not John Astor. I've forgotten his name. That's terrible for me. Anyway, he once was being debated, rather berated rather than debated, I'd say, by a couple of talk radio show hosts here in New Zealand. And he questions a lot of elements of Māori history. And these two radio show hosts were Māori, and they were very successful and powerful and so on and so forth. And they were slandering him, defaming him, right, during the live broadcast. And he said something, and I'll never forget this, and I think this is actually quite important for everybody to remember for as long as they live. If you tell lies about me, I'm going to be forced to tell the truth about you.
Yes, that's how I feel. That's exactly, that's very well said. I'm going to remember that one. And at this point, that's what we have to do. That's the point we're at. We don't have tomorrow. We don't have any time to take the long way around the barn. Right now, it has to be told as it is, and those who are willing to rise to the challenge will. Those that won't deserve to bow their head in shame. That's where we're at.
Indeed. And we'll leave this first hour right there, ladies and gentlemen. We will be right back momentarily with the great Dane Wigington. Back in a moment.
I see you walking in the club, making moves, getting love, you know you're sexy. Walking through the disco noise, kissing girls, kissing boys, it's all